Regular session of the mayor and council of the city of Bisbee County of Cochise, state of Arizona, to be held on Tuesday, April 21st, 2020, at 7 p.m. at the City Hall Building, 915 South Toberville Road, Bisbee, Arizona. Ms. Coronado, would you please call the roll?
Mayor Pro Tem Louis Pollock.
Here.
Councilmember Joni Giacomino is excused. Councilmember Bill Higgins.
Here.
Mayor David M. Smith.
Here.
Councilmember Leslie Jones.
Here.
Councilmember Joan Hanson.
Here.
Councilmember Anna Klein.
Here.
City staff Teresa Coleman. City manager Ashley Coronado. City clerk Joelle Landers. Personnel director James Ledbetter. City attorney.
Thank you, ma'am. For a moment of silence, I'd like us all to please just take a minute to reflect on the ongoing situation throughout the city of Bisbee, County of Cochise, the United States of America, and the world at large. This thing is continuing, and we hope that we're going to be able to do the right thing and get through to the other side. Thank you. If you would, please join with me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Welcome, council and staff. Welcome those that are watching streaming. I was surprised at the number that actually, last meeting that I checked, and there was a very large number that were watching streaming. So welcome, and we're looking forward to the time when you can be back here with us for you that choose to attend. Under my announcements, I'm not going to go into what I've been doing. It has been busy. There is a couple things I would like to mention. One is that unfortunately, the newest stimulus bill that was passed today still excludes our town and others from being reimbursed for the extra expenses associated with the COVID-19 situation. I've already been contacted by Senator Sinema about this, and we will, the mayors in Arizona, as well as our two senators and our representative, Kirkpatrick, are going to continue lobbying to try to get this taken care of. This is something that is beyond what we can handle. I saw Mayor Romero a little while ago on TV from Tucson talking about that their sales are down 30%. And I thought if that was all that we had to worry about in Bisbee, that would certainly be different than the probably 70 plus that we're looking at in percent. The other thing I wanted to mention is people are intrigued about the number of cases of COVID-19 that are actually verified around, and certainly in Cochise County. And I'm asked daily, on many occasions, every day, how many are in Bisbee and why I am hiding the fact that there are some in Bisbee and I'm not indicating that there are and where they are. The answer is, we don't really know that. I do know that the Dispatch newspaper in Douglas had an article today where they indicated where the majority of the numbers were. I have no idea where they got that, but they did indicate that the hot spot right now is Sierra Vista still, and also Douglas. Douglas has at least 11 cases that we know of, as well as there's some cases in Benson, and a few in even more rural areas of Cochise County. Right now, we are still listed as having no cases in the 85603 zip code, but I don't want anybody to please get a false sense of security, because the way the state counts this is, it won't show that we have a case here until we actually have five cases. That's just the way they're doing it. And then on the zip code map, it'll show one, meaning one to five. So act like it's here in Bisbee, please. Act like it's next door to you and take the proper precautions to stay away from it. And I'm sorry for the, what sounds like a lecture. With that, call to the public. And before that, with my, I do want to indicate that my Darth Vader mask has been presented to me. And only because we are in this meeting and we are at least 6 feet apart, I've taken it off and will not be wearing it during the meeting. It is appreciated, and you may see me around town parading as Darth Vader. With that, call to the public. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Megan Connolly, regarding April 21st City Council meeting, Farmers Market, Grant Writers, call to the public. Greetings, council members. I'd like to voice my support in reopening the Farmers Market at the Vista Park. Supporting local farmers is particularly crucial now, considering that the global and domestic food supply chains are being disrupted due to COVID-19. In fact, I believe it's in the city's best interest to develop a food resiliency plan now before the disruptions become severe. Thank you so much for supporting our local farmers market. Please consider eliminating costs the farmers market has to pay to the city and offering assistance financially and logistically to local farmers in getting their products grown and transported to the farmers market. Also, instituting a large-scale composting program and working with the community garden in Bakerville to grow produce for the city makes sense. With support and energy from the city council members, I would be happy and eager to provide support through the resources of the 501c3 nonprofit Ecotopia. The Vista Park location has been established as a reliable farmers market and is well known throughout the region to be open on Saturdays. I believe the open air market has less of a chance of spreading this virus than regular grocery stores like Safeway. There should be consistency in the city regarding the approach to this virus. So if the farmers market is requiring patrons to wear gloves and masks, then I guess that Safeway should also be required to do so. To further the thought of a resiliency plan, I believe the city should also be preparing for disruptions in the power grid and consider getting a grant for solar power. Regarding grant writers, I think it's in the city's best interest to investigate the possibility of contracting a professional grant writer to assist volunteer grant writers and to write grants for the city on an as-needed basis. I believe that grants for the city must not be limited to the constraints, desires, and ability of volunteers to perform or to the constraints of limited staff time. Rather, a concerted effort to bring in a steady flow of cash for various city needs can be accomplished by budgeting for a professional grant writer on staff. There are so many grants out there that the city can benefit from that most volunteers do not have the time to write. Regarding city affairs, I do not think that Facebook is a legitimate platform to conduct city business on. Please consider airing your meetings live on your website and adding a button that allows people to record their call to the public statements in their own voice. Thank you for your consideration and thoughtful approach to these issues. Megan Conley.
Thank you, ma'am.
Fred Miller. Comments on agenda item number 9. 1% TPT raise. I urge the council to vote against putting this specific proposal on the ballot. There is not enough information about the fiscal impact and the reasoning for the proposed 25% sales tax increase to make a sound decision. Please do not make monetary policy in the absence of information. What is needed is a financial analysis that gives the worst, best case scenarios the council and citizens need to know financial projections to see the fiscal impact of the proposal. There are no figures attached to this proposal. There is no if this, then that scenarios. There is no elucidation about sources of money within the budget that might be used to make up for the precipitous drop in sales tax revenue. There is no sunset provision for the tax. Is the city seeking this as a stopgap measure or something permanent? This measure would not take effect until March of 2021. What are the implications of that for fiscal year 21 budget? It is poor policy for the council to vote on this before the budget talks. All of this and more needs to be spelled out to the council and citizens by the treasurer and city manager before voting to be put on the ballot. When the administration asks the council and then residents for a 25% tax raise, we should have adequate information. I realize these are very hard times, and the remainder of the year will be challenging to keep the current level of services and employees. But sales taxes fall disproportionately on poor, fixed income, and working people, a large part of the Bisbee population. Proceeding carefully with all available information is not only prudent, but necessary. This resolution would raise the Bisbee sales tax to 4.5%, and overall it would be 10.6%. Bisbee would have the highest sales tax in Cochise County, the 7th highest sales tax in the state, and would be one of 14 cities out of 97 with a sales tax of more than 10%. Fred Miller, owner, Copper City Inn.
Thank you, ma'am.
Jackie Watkins, San Ysidro Farm, McNeil, Arizona. Public comment regarding item number 6 on the April 21st, 2020 Bisbee City Council meeting. I encourage the council to pass this right-of-way use permit for the Bisbee Farmers Market at the Vista Park. The COVID-19 risk to residents is no greater or less than shoppers at any businesses that are still open to the public. 1. The person-to-person contact at the farmer's market is not any different than shopping at Safeway. Laura's COVID-19 market proposal is like what Safeway is doing with the limiting the number of shoppers and controlling the circulation to one way and the requirement of mask and gloves. 2, the produce area at Safeway does not have someone monitoring how shoppers are handling the produce. If you want to pick a ripe avocado, you keep handling them until you pick the one with the ripeness you want. Wearing gloves might protect the person wearing them, but not the things they touch. At the farmer's market, the produce is handled by one person and another is taking the money. 3. New York State is the hot spot in the United States with the most cases of COVID-19. As of Monday, April 20th, their farmer's markets are exempt from the mass gathering guidance as essential food supply chain and can continue to operate. 4. I will wear mask and gloves. 5. I will provide a hand washing station for the market. 6. I think the fee and charge by the city for the farmer's market use of the park are reasonable.
Thank you, ma'am.
William Crow, referring to item 10, discussion and possible approval of an agreement for airport operations manager and maintenance services. My name is Bill Crow. I am a current member of the Airport Commission. I'm also a retired U.S. Air Force Chief Master Sergeant with more than 30 plus years of experience as an air traffic control manager and airport operations program manager for both military and contract civilian airport operations in both U.S. and international locations. The commission has not been active in recent months for a variety of reasons. Most recently, there are not enough members to constitute a quorum. But even before that, the commission has failed to take their responsibility with regards to oversight of the airport with any timeliness or diligence. There was lengthy discussion about forming a nonprofit group to run day-to-day operations, but after more than 2 years, this nonprofit organization has failed to materialize. In essence, the commission is ineffective in its duties and, in my opinion, should either be re-energized with new blood or be disbanded altogether. More specific to item 10, I do not know the background of Mr. Gurney, but as I have suggested on numerous occasions with the Airport Commission and the previous airport operations manager, there should be a level of training and expertise required of any airport manager. Understanding airport operations as an uncontrolled airport requires extensive knowledge of FAA requirements and other guidance that is germane to airports, not generally found with other type of city operations. I highly encourage the council to consider mandating this training for anyone designated as an airport operations manager and as a requirement in his or her contract for employment, along with a specific timeline to do so. This requirement is designed to improve the safe and efficient operation of any airport, regardless of size and complexity. The Airport Association of Airport Executives, AAAE, can provide this type of training and certification through online and resident courses all across the U.S. and is of minimal cost to the city. This training will aid the city and manager by ensuring initial training and continuing education as rules and regulations change in the airport industry over the course of time, which they frequently do. Thank you for your time and the consideration of this matter with regards to this important position. Bill Crow.
Thank you.
Jay Harris, agenda item number 14 of April 21st, 2020, regular council session. Agenda item number 14 is presented in the agenda packet under the subject heading of update on the Harris litigation to include defense costs from the city. In the packet, the only document supporting this agenda item is an invoice submitted by Southwest Risk of Scottsdale, Arizona. This invoice shows that the total of the payments already made by the city, together with the payments that are due, exceeds $32,000. The invoice offers no explanation as to the reason why the city is being billed for this amount. If any portion of the amount of the invoice is claimed to be the result of the ongoing litigation in Harris versus the City of Bisbee, the council would do well to reflect that the council itself had the means to completely avoid such litigation all that the mayor and council would have had to do to avoid such litigation would have been to timely comply with its required duty to hear and consider the appeal taken from the former city manager's denial of the Jacobs contract protest submitted by Pulling and Harris. That the mayor and council were required to hear the protester's appeal is made plain by the unambiguous language of Bisbee City Code, subsection 3.5.20e3, that states as follows. The council shall hear and consider the appeal. It continues to say, the protester and the city manager shall be given a reasonable opportunity to be heard in the matter. Jeff Harris, Warren resident of 38 years.
Thank you, ma'am. Moving to accounts payable.
I move that we pay accounts payable in the amount of $275,173.34.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion, we have a second. Do we have any questions? Hearing none, all those in favor of paying accounts payable signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. We pass it unanimously. Approval of consent agenda, there's one item. Item A, approval of the minutes of the regular session of Mayor and Council held on March 17th, 2020 at 7 p.m. Do we have a motion?
I move to approve the minutes of the regular session of Mayor and Council held on March 17th, 2020 at 7 p.m.
Second.
Thank you. Ms. Coronado?
Mayor Pro Tem Pollock?
Aye.
Councilmember Higgins?
Aye.
Councilmember Johns?
Aye.
Councilmember Hansen?
Aye.
Councilmember Klein?
Aye.
Mayor Smith?
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. There is no old business. Moving to new business. Item number 3. Public hearing and discussion of possible approval of resolution R20-10 regarding the community development block grant set aside funds for fiscal year 2019-2020. To select a project and submit an application. So with the public hearing, I'll open the public hearing. Is there anybody, do we have anybody that has indicated they want to speak on this?
No.
By telephone, telegraph, email?
No, sir.
Anything?
Nothing's been submitted.
Okay. All right. And the same question against, anybody?
No, nothing's been submitted.
All right, thank you. And with that, I will close the public meeting and turn this over to Ms. Coleman, our city manager.
Thank you. So Keith Dennis with CEGO has been assisting the city with their Colonius set-aside funds for use specifically in the Tinntown neighborhood because it is a designated Colonia within the city of Bisbee. We do already have phase 3 of the Tinntown stormwater project engineered and ready to go. So that is one that could be applied for right away. Do you have any other questions about projects?
No, I certainly don't. Anybody, any member of the council? And is the project that we're identifying is phase 3 of the Tinntown?
I believe it's actually a stormwater project.
Stormwater project.
Yes.
Yeah, I know that we definitely wanted to get that finished so that we can move on to something else and before it gets rained out and we have to start back to phase 1 again.
Is that the finished after phase 3 that will be finished?
Yes.
Or is it
No, there were 3 phases to that project. Okay. And it is actually the street improvements that provide for the stormwater mitigation.
Okay, do we have a motion?
I move to approve resolution R-20-10 and select the project of Tin Town, phase three, to be submitted for the Community Development Block Grant Set Aside Funds fiscal year 2019-2020.
Second.
Thank you. We have a motion. We have a second. Ms. Coronado.
Mayor Pro Tem Pollock.
Aye.
Councilmember Higgins.
Aye.
Councilmember Johns.
Aye.
Councilmember Hansen.
Aye.
Councilmember Klein.
Aye.
Mayor Smith.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Item 4, discussion of possible approval of resolution R-20-07, designating the Saginaw neighborhood as a colonia. Ms. Coleman?
Yeah, so we're seeing so many advantages to having colonia neighborhoods and having access to some funds that have been set aside and are not available to the general public. Or statewide even, it's primarily the four counties served by Sego and Nogales and Yuma, as I understand it, that are eligible to go after the colonia set aside funds. So we would be able to use that program to do improvements in other neighborhoods. The criteria is based on the condition of the neighborhood in 1990. So I have been doing some research and going back to some previous studies done in the city. The obvious, let's see, which one are we considering right now? Saginaw. And then we'll go to, so I'll just talk about them both. And then also Zacatecas Canyon is the other resolution. So Zacatecas Canyon is not served by a sewer system, which gives it 5 points in the rating for colonia. It also does not have a fire suppression system, which goes to the safe housing. And then the housing stock that's there is in very poor condition. So it's a very good application. Keith Dennis did review both applications that I put, packets that I put together today, and feels like he'll be ready to submit these to the state for their comment tomorrow even, so if they're approved. We did drive-bys, we did photos, and then Joe Ward also made some additional comments regarding the neighborhoods and the fact that really, if anything has changed in condition, the condition of the Saginaw neighborhood has improved since 1990. But it still left a good portion of the properties in very poor condition. Do you have any questions about colonia designation?
Yes.
Was Bakerville looked at at all?
I believe that Bakerville is our other colonia that's already designated. So Tin Town and Bakerville were already designated, and now we would be adding Zacatecas Canyon and Saginaw.
Yeah, presently there are no Ward 1 colonies.
That's always creepy.
Well, if it passes, then it would be.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
But not right now.
Also, yeah, I was just saying.
Any questions?
No, just a comment. Yes. I spoke with Keith Dennis about this. And he was very pleased and highly praised Teresa Coleman for the work that she's put in on this. He said there was about a half inch stack of paper that goes with this that Teresa has produced. So
yeah, so I just provided you with the cover sheet and the rating, but there are documents to back that.
So I just want to say thank you.
Okay.
Yeah. And thank you. So do we have a motion on item number 4?
I move to approve resolution R-20-07 designating the Saginaw neighborhood as a colonia.
Second.
We have a motion, we have a second. Ms. Coronado.
Mayor Pro Tem Pollock.
Aye.
Councilmember Higgins.
Aye.
Councilmember Johns.
Aye.
Councilmember Hansen.
Aye.
Councilmember Klein.
Aye.
Mayor Smith.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Item number 5, discussion of possible approval of resolution R-20-08. designating the Zacatecas Canyon as a colonia. Do you have anything else to add on this?
I don't.
Okay. Do we have a motion on this?
I move to approve resolution 9-20-08 designating the Zacatecas Canyon. Ms. Brett, I wouldn't get the first word right. Canyon as a colonia.
Second.
And for the record, that's R, not a 9, right?
Right.
Correct.
Or do we have on this?
That would be resolution R20-08 for the record.
Okay.
Did I say 9?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, why didn't somebody correct me?
I just did.
Okay. R-20-08.
Ms. Coronado.
Mayor Pro Tem Pollack.
Aye.
Councilmember Higgins.
Aye.
Councilmember Johns.
Aye.
Councilmember Hansen.
Aye.
Councilmember Klein.
Aye.
Mayor Smith.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Item number 6, discussion of possible approval of a park facility and right-of-way use permit for the Bisbee Farmers Market for the use of Lower Vista every Saturday from May 1st, 2020 through December 26, 2020 from 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. This includes setup and breakdown. Ms. Coleman?
So it is just the time of year to renew the permit. Additionally, Ms. Smith has given some consideration to the current health and safety situation in our city. I did suggest a few things. One was that she had listed a maximum of 10 people. I felt that by allowing two at a time to enter to get to a wash station, she could actually go up to a maximum of 24 people within the park at one time. And then she did provide a map as well. Let's see, are both her map? Yeah, so you can see on her map, she had suggested using just one entrance to the south. I am suggesting that that enter and exit be on the north side to allow for the one-way traffic to kind of come in on one side, go around through the produce area, which tends to be the most heavily trafficked area. So it'll spread folks out a little more before they get there. Actually, it's also an advantage to the other vendors to spread folks out a little more and then exit in a separate manner instead of have that bottleneck on the south end. So that though is totally up to you. I'm just providing that as a alternative plan for the farmer's market.
I had some things to add if you were finished.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, if you have any questions, though, let me know.
Ms. Coleman and I have had meetings with Ms. Smith and others in reference to the farmer's market situation. For those that don't quite understand, one of the reasons of shutting the farmer's market down was there is no controlled ingress or egress. People come from everywhere. And as opposed to people keep wanting to talk about Safeway, there's a door at Safeway that you have to line up and come in. That is one aspect. The agreement that we came up with Ms. Smith is that there is controlled egress and ingress, and so that will help greatly. And of course, when this thing goes away, then there's going to be these restrictions certainly loosened. There's been comments about how much they're being charged. I would like people understand that we have given them thousands of dollars in forgiven fees, and that you authorized me to talk to them a couple years ago, which I did and brought it back to the council, and we agreed on $600 a year, which gave them a benefit of several thousand dollars a year. And so that $600 a year is for the electricity and for the water that's used every Saturday. And I can guarantee you it does not cover the electricity and the water that is used.
So for those that think, audience-wise, that this is something that we should be forgiving, the answer is we already have. I would like in this one, I would like consideration of the council to add one other point. And when we had talked before, this wasn't in my mind, but a big problem that we've had throughout the years at the farmer's market is the pet problem. Now, I'm not talking about people walking their dogs. I'm talking about people dumping puppies and kittens at the farmer's market for people to take home, often diseased so I would like the council to consider requiring a clause that no animals will be sold or given away in the farmer's market unless it's through a recognized rescue society or rescue agency. That covers our friends, it covers Bar, and it covers some of those others that occasionally are there with adoptions, and that the animals are spay or neutered. And so I obviously will bring that up for discussion, but that's my recommendation, that's my request, is that that be added as a clause. So to make it easy, I think that would be no animals will be sold or given away except by a recognized rescue group, and if they're spay and neutered or neutered. Questions?
I have a question on, I know that they're going to have the one exit or entrance exit, and it's going to be a one way. Are they going to have somebody who is going to be monitoring that? Mm-hmm. Because Safeway has got that, but people are not abiding by it. Mm-hmm. So we need to make sure that it is enforced.
Well, Ms. Hanson, we're going to, it is required. They indicate they will be doing that, but we're not going to be placing a cop there to.
No, I'm not talking about that, but if they have somebody that is designated to do that monitoring.
Within their agreement, they do have, yes, ma'am.
Yeah, they're indicating they have 4 volunteers and 2 managers who can help within the farmers market.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, sir.
As I understand this proposal, as of May 1st, the farmers market will be able to.
That would be May 2nd, I believe. Assuming that we're told the peak of this is going to be hitting right about now, and assuming that the numbers are going down, then yes. It's dynamic. And so our intent right now, and our discussions with Laura Smith in opening it right now are May 2nd. She does understand that if, God forbid, this worsens or whatever, then that would have to be stretched out.
Understood. Thank you.
Any other questions? Do we have a motion?
I move to approve the park facility and right-of-way use permit for the Bisbee Farmers Market for the use of Lower Vista every Saturday from May 1st, 2020 through December 26, 2020, 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. This includes setup and breakdown.
Second.
Does this then, as it sits, assume that it is pursuant to this agreement? To the package that you have as to what the rules are.
Including the dog.
And I'm asking if that includes then my request of the animal.
Would you like me to state that?
I want the record really, really clear, sir. I just, what you stated is exactly what you're being asked to state, but I would, if you would, pursuant to our, to the agreement and the added clause.
Pursuant to the agreement of council and to the added clause.
Second.
Mr. Ledbetter, is that...
And again, just for clarity from the maker of the motion, Councilmember Pollock, your added clause is prohibiting the distribution of animals for sale or giving away unless through a rescue agency that's recognized, and also the animals must be spayed or neutered. Is that correct?
Yes, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And that's good with the second as well?
Yes.
Thank you. We have a motion and we have a second. Ms. Coronado?
Mayor Pro Tem Pollock?
Aye.
Councilmember Higgins?
Aye.
Councilmember Johns?
Aye.
Councilmember Hansen?
Aye.
Councilmember Klein?
Aye.
Mayor Smith?
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you all. And Ms. Coleman, thank you for helping me with that problem. Item number seven, discussion of possible approval of resolution R-2009, approving application for and possible administration of grants written by volunteer grant writers. Ms. Coleman.
So for about a year now, there has actually been a resolution in place that allowed volunteer grant writers to write grants for the cities. It was specifically grant writers associated with Old Bisbee Firewise, and it was more specifically for grants for equipment or uses that would match with their organizational goals and structure. This takes that same basic premise but expands it to some of the other needs that the city has, so that we can allow our grant writers to spread their wings a little bit. For example, we had the USDA grant that just went out, which was a volunteer grant writer, but not really specifically tied to Old Bisbee Firewise, though their grant writers were involved in the process. So this just opens it up and makes it more clear.
Yes, ma'am?
Just a comment. This is kind of what Ms. Giacomino and I were mm-hmm. trying mm-hmm. to get at the last meeting, so thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other comments, questions? Do we have a motion?
I move to approve resolution R-20-09, approving application for and possible administration of grants written by volunteer grant writers.
Second.
Ms. Coronado.
Mayor Pro Tem Pollock?
Aye.
Councilmember Higgins?
Aye.
Councilmember Johns?
Aye.
Councilmember Hansen?
Aye.
Councilmember Klein?
Aye.
Mayor Smith?
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Item number eight, discussion of possible approval of resolution R-2005, submitting to the electors at the general election of November 3rd, 2020, a proposition to make permanent the transaction privilege tax levied by the voters in 2014, dedicated to streets and infrastructure. Ms. Coleman?
So this is part of the request from your last meeting to divide out the two concepts regarding sales tax. One, the 1% that's currently in place but sunsets in 2023, and then the concept that perhaps there could be an additional 1% sales tax. So this makes permanent the 1% that would otherwise expire in 2023.
And this would still be earmarked for streets and infrastructure?
Right. It wouldn't change the purpose for which the voters implemented the tax.
It would just mean that we get to continue to fix our streets. Mm-hmm. Any questions? Yes?
I just want one clarification, though. That streets and infrastructure, streets and then the infrastructure that impact the streets.
That's the way it currently is.
Okay.
Yes.
Because every time I talk to someone, I get a different answer. So.
Well, that was what was taken to the voters.
Right. Exactly. And I just want to make sure that's exactly.
So it's continually when you discuss that. It's continually asking about walls.
Right.
And the answer is, if that wall impacts that street,
right.
Yes.
But with the way it's written, doesn't really lend itself to saying that. It doesn't really say that. Because it says infrastructure including streets. And then it talks about...
publicly owned support structures.
Right.
And drainage ways.
And sidewalks and...
Right.
Okay. Just want it very clear to the people.
Yes. Ms. Klein, did you have...
I do have a couple of questions. One is what Ms. Hansen asked. And then I guess I'm just questioning why we're doing this right now. It doesn't sunset until 23. We're going to have the bed tax on the ballot. And given the fact of the situation that all of us are in right now, I don't know that this would, that we have a chance of even continuing this just because when it comes time to vote, people just, all they're going to see is tax, tax, tax. Mm-hmm. And I really question if this is a time to put this since we've got time before it sunsets.
Ms. Cole?
That's absolutely correct. You do have time. I am aware that there's a situation where the bed tax needed to be renewed or a portion of it and didn't get put on the ballot. This was just a way to say, hey, we don't have to wait till the last minute. You do have an opportunity at this election, but then you do certainly have the option to wait until the next
Yeah, the timing, unfortunately, the timing's rather poor. But we never know what the state legislature is going to do. And so the bed tax, as you recall, we were going to be bringing in a special, midterm, and then the legislature let us know we couldn't do that. So that's how we got caught and we lost that bed tax. And so this was just kind of like a stopgap to make sure it's done now and put away, but I'm not sure that anybody's married to this idea, Ms. Klein. I think that your point is well taken. It's just something that we really need to make sure gets done and monitor Phoenix and make sure that they don't change the rules again before it's too late. That's all.
Question,
sir.
How much time is required with an issue like this on the ballot?
I'm going to defer to your city clerk.
We're going to need enough time for council, of course, to review it, discuss it, and approve something. We'd have to make sure it's on publicity pamphlets to go out to the public so they're aware of what's on the ballot. So I would need all language finalized by June.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Also, to add to what Ms. Klein has said, this is a very popular tax, at least that's the impression I get from being on the Streets and Infrastructure Committee and from talking to people in the community. I think that the timing is definitely bad, and especially in light of the fact that we're going to ask for an additional 1 cent sales tax to cover critical needs. And I think that after we pave Tombstone Canyon, this tax will be even more popular and stand a better chance of being reestablished by the voters. One objection I have to it as written is that it's a permanent tax, and I think that's a bad idea. I think it should be sunsetted just as the original one was, and 10 years from, or 8 years from the time that it's approved, we can look at it again and say, do we really need it anymore? And if not, we can get rid of it. And that's what I would ask be added to the resolution. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. This sunsets in 23, correct?
Yes, 23.
All right, so we have to be aware that we have to, this has to go on the ballot in 22.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we can't.
Unless they change.
We can't, like, it, well, that's what I'm saying. Unless they change anything. This has to go on the ballot in 22. So we're looking at, the council is looking at revisiting this in a year, at the latest. Okay? That seems to be a consensus. I don't think that, but...
It'll be 22 that we revisit it.
No. Okay. Yeah. We don't need a motion. Correct, Mr. Ledbetter? It's an item that's not being pursued.
That's correct. That's correct. As long as you can clearly identify that there's a consensus, that's correct.
Correct.
Unless a council member wants to make a motion, they could do so, and that will identify for you for the minutes that there was consensus, because there's not a council member who wants to move it forward.
Fair enough. Would we like to have a motion that this is put off to the future? We don't need it, because we're not tabling it, we don't need a date specific.
That's correct.
I move that we delay the resolution for the 1% tax for the streets until later.
I second that.
Do you want to identify the resolution?
How about resolution?
Resolution 9-20-05.
That's probably all we need.
Yeah, thank you.
Not nine.
Did I say nine again?
Something on your screen.
No, it's an R.
All right, as I understand, and your
I second that again.
You'll second that.
Yeah.
And as I understand, the motion is to delay resolution R-2005 to the future.
Yes.
Thank you. Those in favor?
Aye.
Saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay. Motion carried. I promise this will get a lot easier.
Could we have just not hit ask for a motion and then nobody makes a motion and none of that?
Yes. Well, no. Sure, you could have. But also, when you have consensus...
That would have been easier, that's all I'm saying.
Well, actually not. But when you have consensus and not to not take a subject up, then that subject does not have to be brought up.
Ah, that's true. Okay.
Item number 9, discussion of possible approval of resolution R-2014, submitting to the electors at the general election November 3rd, 2020, a proposition to permanently increase the transaction privilege tax by 1% dedicated to essential services. Ms. Coleman.
Hi, so I think one of the first questions is what would the budgetary impact be when we discuss this next week? It's about $240,000 because it would go into effect in March. So it would be a small portion of what we've proposed in the budget at this time. I will, in your budget discussion, talk more about the grade plan and how we can provide some take care of some pay disparity between employees, some of them being essential service employees. So that's the idea, to bring this forward. I can answer questions if you have more questions about that. We can talk about this again, of course, after your budget discussion.
Yes, and we do have, if I might, we do have a timing on this issue. And that timing is by June. And so this issue, if this wants to be put off until after budget, which is next week, then we can certainly take it up at that particular point. And you can, by going through the budget packet, see the impact that this provides us, both positive and negative. So if this is a decision that you would like to put off until after you actually see the nuts and bolts of the budget, then I certainly understand that.
Yeah, I
have it. Ms. Klein?
I would like to see us do that, and that way we have clear picture, I guess, and then we can maybe be a little more specific other than just essential services.
What was the intent of the 1%? Because I know that this was on the last agenda, but it's just right. Because of the COVID-19
no.
And the revenue, or just?
No, it does speak more to the pay disparity that's become, that's been demonstrated by mm-hmm. the grade plan adopted by the Employee Council.
Then definitely we need, I would like to have much more information on this.
Sure. Yep, we can discuss.
Ms. Jones?
Oh, I was just agreeing with that. I'd like to wait until after budget.
I have a statement I was going to read into the record, but it's moot now. that was good. That was good. I agree with what you said. I'm in favor of waiting until after we discuss the budget.
All right.
Okay, for the record, then, do you want to make a motion? You did it so well, Ms. Hanson and Jay.
See if I can get the R right. I move that we delay resolution R-20-14 submitted to the electors at the general election of November 3rd, 2020 to a later date after the budget.
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Item 10, discussion and possible approval of an agreement for airport operations manager and maintenance services. Ms. Coleman.
Hi, so your agreement with Mr. Duran had expired, and it was a good time to reevaluate the situation at the airport. We did ask him to vacate the property based on the fact that we no longer had an agreement for his services, and at that time discovered that the property did require quite a bit of maintenance, which has been going on in the meantime. And as that maintenance was taking place, Matt Gurney, who is your operations manager, expressed an interest in occupying the property and providing the services that had previously been provided by Mr. Turan. So this is an agreement that's been reviewed by your city attorney and is agreeable to Mr. Gurney as well. So if this is an agreement that the city council feels like would be to your advantage, I feel that it would be. Mr. Tran had very little contact with the city. Matt's here every day. Matt's aware of the situation at the airport, some of the maintenance that needs to be done, and he's taken it upon himself to start to pursue that right away. So this is for your consideration.
Thank you. Would any of his job duties fall within the area that Mr. Crow brought up that would require training?
Not that I'm aware of.
So we call him an airport manager, but he's really
a property manager.
A property manager, right. And I'm thinking that perhaps we don't want to call him something that provides liability on him that he. I'm just thinking that we want to. Mm-hmm. For his good, be able to call him what he is.
Okay, so airport property manager and maintenance services?
I think that that's okay with me if council feels that's gonna, that
so
title
can,
will alleviate my worry about him following FAA guidelines, et cetera, that when he doesn't have that responsibility, that's what I'm after.
Make the motion that way, and we can make that adjustment to the application.
Great, wonderful. Ms. Klein.
I also had questions about, I guess, his experience. Some of the things that Mr. Crow brought up. But if you change the description, then I guess everything would be okay. My question is, was this opened up to other city employees, or was it just him? Because I think there's a lot of employees that probably could have benefited from.
Yeah, so the initial discussion was a discussion I was having, an ongoing discussion that I'm having with your police chief, is the desire to be able to provide housing for brand new officers. And I was also aware that we had three brand new firefighters who were coming on. So that was the first thought, was would this be appropriate to be able to offer some intermediate housing to some of our new employees right away while they get acclimated to Bisbee, figure out kind of where they would prefer to live, do they want to buy a property, et cetera. But given the condition of the house at the time, it really was not habitable the way that it had been left. So as I stated, Matt got involved doing some major work there, replacing drywall. I don't know if there's a window that isn't cracked or broken, toilets that weren't working, that kind of thing. So it's really been Matt who has made the effort to bring the property up to the point where that it could be habitable.
Isn't that kind of his job as operations manager for public works though?
Well, he would not personally do that work on his own time as operations manager.
Question?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Ledbetter, for the purposes of income tax reporting, this in-kind agreement, how would that be handled, or is it something that needs to be considered for reporting purposes?
From the city's perspective, not necessarily, but that would be Mr. Gurney's individual decision that he should consider making.
Thank you.
Anything else? Yes, Ms. Hanson.
I'm not quite sure how the fueling goes, but would he be involved with that at all?
Well, he actually is now as part of his position, and he and Jesus are looking at purchasing sooner than later a new fueling system with a new card reader. That pretty much takes care of itself, other than you do need to make sure the electricity stays working and the card reader is appropriate and the fuel is in the tank. So.
Yeah, otherwise it's remote.
Right, that's what I was getting at.
Yeah, but he is involved,
right,
to the extent that we have to have it properly operating.
Oh, right, yes. Right.
Any other questions? Do we have a motion?
I move to approve the agreement for airport operations airport property manager and maintenance services.
I second.
All those in favor signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
Nay.
Motion passes 5-1. Item 11, discussion of possible direction to staff to schedule a work session for easements. Ms. Coleman.
So I think this is a carryover from when our meetings were open to the public, maybe 4 or 5 meetings ago, when we did have a couple of requests regarding easements on the agenda, and the council asked that they have a work session before making a determination or a decision in regard to those easements. So here we are. There are folks still interested in obtaining portions of easements. So a work session would still be appropriate if it's your desire to get one on the calendar. Let me know what you think.
My personal opinion is that it is something that we would want, but I think we can calendar it a couple months from now.
Okay.
Because it's very important that the public be there.
Okay. For that work session.
You bet.
Okay.
Great. That's my preference.
All right.
So that would be my suggestion.
I agree with you.
Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe the first meeting in July or something,
sure,
like that. Okay.
Item 12, discussion of possible direction to staff to mitigate sewer costs and to possibly eliminate late fees and interest on all accounts during the stay-at-home order. Ms. Coleman.
We have received calls primarily from business owners who are now no longer operating but still receiving their city bills. Your sewer rate, your rate study, was based on 5,000 gallons of usage. However, it does not divide out what portion of the rate covers your infrastructure and what portion of your rate covers your usage or the gallons basically that are put into the system. That's your infrastructure. I did do some research, including Willcox, Benson, and Huachuca City, who do charge by the thousands of gallons for sewer. They charge $3 per 1,000 gallons. Your rate is based on a 5,000 gallon usage, which would be essentially a $15 credit to anyone who is not currently using water. We do receive their water bill, or we could ask folks to provide the comparison between their water usage this time last year and their water usage this year, and then give them the $3 per 1,000 gallon credit on their sewer bill. But we wouldn't be able to eliminate the charge completely. We still have infrastructure that we need to maintain. So that's one possibility to offer some relief to businesses that are not currently open and using water. Another mechanism that the city council has used, I think, in regards to a fire situation was that there was a month that the council didn't charge any interest or late fees on garbage or sewer payments in order to allow folks the time to get through the disaster and then get caught up without getting further behind. So those are two possibilities of ways that the council could decide to provide some relief during this time.
Comments?
More questions?
Ms. Kelly?
No questions. I'm glad, you know, I wish it could be more for some of the businesses that are really struggling right now, but I guess any little bit that, you know, we can help them out with, you know, is good, so thank you.
Ms. Hanson?
Sure.
Is this an either or can we do both of these?
Oh, you can.
You can do anything
you want. You are the council.
Well, no, yeah. Because it's
you
just...
You can pay it yourself if you like.
No. Oh, you mean the way that it's worded?
Yeah, I just want, you know, because I think we should do both.
And that's perfectly fine.
So are we going to have 3,000, how many bills do we send out? 3,000?
Well, you know, a lot of folks have all their kids at home, so they're actually using more water probably than they've used in the past. But for those who can demonstrate that they're using less water, it would be up to a $15 credit.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just looking at the
right.
The staff. The staff time would be absolutely...
Actually, Carrie believes that we receive a spreadsheet and that we can compare the spreadsheet. Unfortunately, we started getting those spreadsheets maybe about mid-year last year. So then if this goes into June, we would have both last year in June and this year in June. Carrie believes that the water bill that you can show your usage last year compared to this year for the same month, and that they could bring in their bill or send in their a copy of that water usage with their payment and show that they were using less water or no water compared to their usage last year.
Okay.
We did talk about it.
I know. Yeah, I just was a little apprehensive about the staff time.
Yeah.
On the forgiving interest and penalties, right? I would suggest that we have to be very clear what that means, and that we're forgiving the interest and penalties for those months that are affected and not
for these habitually past people that owe us thousands of dollars in penalties and interest. And so it's going to have to be crafted in a way that is very, very clear. And I suggest that we have to give them a time by the time they have to catch up. Does that make sense? Like, if we're forgiving two months, let's assume for a minute, we're talking about 2 months, then within 60 days after that, you have to be caught up. So the point is, giving this back to you for more staff work on it, unfortunately, to...
Okay, and bring it to you at the meeting.
With those understandings that I think it needs to be like pretty structured, okay. Pretty well crafted.
Okay, so we'll craft a motion then for your May 5th meeting.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I think, obviously, I think it's a good idea, and so forth. I just, I know it's hard to believe, but there could be people that would want to take advantage. It's just me.
I would like to see a longer length of time, though, for to pay it back, because that's all going to be determined on. And especially the businesses, how quickly they can get back up and running and making money on that. So I think all of that needs to be included.
Okay. We'll come back with some language for you.
Do you feel you've received direction?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Item 13. Do we have a motion to go into executive session for the purpose of discussion and consultation with city attorney?
I move that we enter into executive session for the purpose of discussion and consultation with city attorney to provide legal guidance on pending matters per ARS 38-431.03A47.
Second.
Thank you. Those in favor, signify by...
If I could, Mr. Mayor, subpart 7 is a separate part with respect to the acquisition of real property. And so if Mr.
Yes.
Councilmember Higgins would be willing to acknowledge that we'll also be discussing negotiation and acquisition of real property under subpart 7, I would appreciate that as well, because it'll be a legal report plus the subpart 7 on real property. Those are two statutes, 4 and 7, are two different parts. So I'm asking for 4 and 7.
No, you can say 4 and your motion is 4. And 7.
Please.
Okay. All right. So, okay. 4 and 7.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have a second? I'll second. Those in favor, signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. We are in executive session.
I second.
We have a motion and a second. Those in favor, signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. We are out of executive session. Item number 8. Okay. Item number 14, update on the Harris litigation to include defense costs due from the city. Mr. Ledbetter.
Thank you, Mayor, members of council. One of the pending cases involving the city of Bisbee, and there are very few, but one is involving a case in which relief is being sought that's not your standard general liability relief. As you know, the claim is being brought against the city of Bisbee with respect to an underlying contractual challenge. The case has been assigned to Southwest Risk. Southwest Risk has been paying the outside counsel's bills. That outside counsel is named Marshall or Marty Humphreys in Tucson at his law firm, and they've been paying them. What you have in your packet tonight is an invoice, which is due from Southwest Risk. And basically the way that works is, because this is not a standard general liability claim, it's not an auto accident case, it's not a trip and fall. For those cases, oftentimes 100% of your defense is paid, depending on the nature of the case. Because this is an equitable relief claim, that type of claim is not covered 100% of your policy, which is what has generated this bill. And the way it works is, the city's responsible for the first 50,000 of loss adjustment expenses. And of that first $50,000, the city pays, excuse me, misspoke. The city pays 50% of the first $25,000 of the loss adjustment expenses. Thereafter, the city pays 25% of the next $25,000. However, when $100,000 in expenses, if that were to occur, I don't anticipate that happens in this case, if that were to occur, then the city pays 100% of everything over $100,000. So 50% of the first $25,000 and 25% of the next $25,000 up to $50,000, and from 50 to 100 covered by Southwest Risk after 100, 100% the city. So that's why you've got this invoice that says payments have been made by Southwest Risk, which is correct. I've confirmed that these payments were made, $21,402.98. Because you pay 50% of the first $25,000, Southwest Risk is asking the city now for reimbursement pursuant to its contract of $10,701.49 from the city budget as reimbursement on this case. The status of the case is it's on appeal, it appealed by the plaintiff to Division 2 of the Court of Appeals. The city prevailed in the trial court setting. It's now been appealed, and that's its current status. There will be more bills to come because it's currently on appeal. The city's briefing is coming forward. There'll be arguments in front of the Court of Appeals and more expenses, so you will get invoiced more later based upon this 50% proposition up to the 25, but then it'll decrease slightly because you'll get 25% billed for the next 25,000.
In this particular case, this type of action, and because he's acting as his own attorney, will we have the option of attorney's fees upon losing the, assuming the appeal is lost?
Attorney's fees are up to the discretion of the court, and so that is an option that can be pursued, but it is subject to the discretion of the court. It's reasonable attorney's fees subject to judicial discretion.
Right. Any questions? Thank you, sir. Item 15, discussion of possible approval of a notice of intent to adopt ordinance O-20-06, authorizing the acquisition or exercise of interest in a real property located within the city of Bisbee. Ms. Coleman?
Yes, thank you. The city does have a sewer and garbage liens on several properties within the city. Actually, in some cases, two or three liens because the bills have gone unpaid for quite some time. And the city has never exercised that interest in the real property or pursued a foreclosure on the liens that are currently there. What I would like to do is start pursuing an avenue by which we either, one, foreclose on the liens that we have or work with the other lien holders to acquire an interest in the property, many of them that are city vacant right now. And then the idea would be, after pursuing the acquisition of the interest, to come to the council with the ordinance to take ownership of that real property, and then use that real property for affordable housing initiatives within the city.
Thank you, ma'am. Any questions? Do we have a motion?
I move to approve the notice of intent to adopt ordinance O-20-06, authorizing the acquisition or exercise of interest in real property located within the city of Bisbee.
Second.
We have a motion and seconds. Ms. Coronado.
Mayor Pro Tem Pollack.
Aye.
Councilmember Higgins.
Aye.
Councilmember Johns.
Aye.
Councilmember Hanson.
Aye.
Councilmember Klein.
Aye.
Mayor Smith.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Item 16. Discussion of possible approval of notice of intent to adopt ordinance O-20-07, authorizing the acquisition of real property located within the city of Bisbee. Ms. Coleman.
Yes, thank you. I've been working with the chief of police and also discussions with the fire chief regarding housing for newly hired firefighters and police officers right here in the city of Bisbee. Affordable rentals are a bit of a challenge, so we have been looking at real estate that might be suitable for housing them in the short term or in the interim until they can identify something that works within their budget. One piece of property that we did look at is at 121 Fort Huachuca Lane here in Bisbee. The property is currently available. It is currently up for auction, and I would like to have the council's approval to go ahead and pursue the acquisition of that property. This is your notice of intent ordinance. At your next regular meeting, I would come back with an ordinance that would spell out to you what the terms of that acquisition would be.
If we have questions, do we have a motion?
I move to approve the notice of intent to adopt ordinance 02007, authorizing the acquisition of real property located at 121 Fort Huachuca Lane.
Second.
Thank you. Very small point, but it's 020-07.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I see that. Thank you.
And do we still have a second?
Say no.
Thank you. Ms. Coronado.
Mayor Pro Tem Pollock.
Aye.
Councilmember Higgins.
Aye.
Councilmember Johns.
Aye.
Councilmember Hansen.
Aye.
Councilmember Klein.
Aye.
Mayor Smith.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. City Manager's Report, Ms. Coleman.
Hi, so you all have your draft budget. We are, Harry and I are already getting some comments and questions. Please get that to us over the next couple of days. We'd love to get answers to questions out to you so you have them over the weekend before our first special session on Monday. That'll help us all, I think, in the conversation. So as you review those, please feel free to reach out to us. Harry is an awesome resource. If I don't know the answer, she probably does. So that's your draft budget. Grade plan. So I did print this out in a format that kind of lays out the entire grade plan. When I interviewed for this position, one of the discussions that I had with staff was the pay structure for the city of Bisbee. And I have worked with your personnel director and with the employee council to adopt a grade plan. It essentially takes each position within the city and assigns a point structure to it. The city in the past has paid for professionals to do this work for the city. I can't remember what year it was done. We used a free resource available through the state of Minnesota Office of Budget and Management to try to match up positions with the way that they describe them and assign the points. The purpose of the points is to put positions within grades or to say what the comparable work is, especially if you look at grade C on this plan. How do you compare the work of a groundskeeper to the work of an administrative assistant, for example? And without going into too much detail about pay equity, but it also takes a look at male classes compared to female classes, so that we're not saying that female work is not as valuable, for example, as male work. So that's another thing that this allows us to do. We compared this outcome with an outcome that the council paid for in the past, and it was pretty accurate based on those results. We made a couple of adjustments based on recommendations to the employee council. Actually, the employee council approved the adjustments based on recommendations that came to them. So there may have been a few positions that didn't score quite as high based on the resource we used, but the employee council felt that actually that position had a higher value than we had come up with. One of those, for example, I think being the administrative assistant at the Queen Mine Tour. So that position they felt was a little more valuable than where it had originally shown up on here. One thing that you're aware of is in grade N, we identified that the library manager, there was quite a pay disparity between the responsibility of his position, the comparable positions, and what he was being compensated. And I actually took the difference between the $120,000 that the council had budgeted for the administrator, for your management position, and the $112,000 that was my maximum pay following my 6-month review, and added that $8,000 to the library manager position, and you can see that there's still a significant pay disparity based on the responsibility of this position. So that is one of the adjustments that was made here. Another adjustment that was that will be reflected in your budget was an adjustment to the police officer wages. So as you can see, grade G is your firefighter EMTs, grade H is most of your police officers, and grade I is your firefighter paramedics. And ideally, your police officers' pay would fall somewhere between the 39,624, which is the structural annual salary for a new firefighter, and the 42,926, which is the structural annual pay for your firefighter paramedic. And stop me if you have questions. So we did increase the annual pay for a police officer by right around $2,000 a year in this budget that you're going to consider on Monday. And as you can see, that still doesn't really take care of the pay disparity for your police officers yet, but it's a move in the right direction. This is only the grade plan. This does not include step increases. Step increases are going to be a completely different budgetary discussion, and I don't think we're ready for that in this budget cycle. So at this time, we only attempted to address pay disparity to the best of our ability. So, and if you do have questions, if you take this home and you come up with questions, those are questions to send to us before then.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're not going to ask questions now.
But oh, that's right, you're not going to ask questions now. So send me questions if you have questions about that. Okay. Also in your packet is an MOU with the fire department. There had been an MOU in place, but it was quite dated. Joelle and I did meet with representatives of the firefighters union, and this represents the culmination of about 3 meetings and the agreements between the folks who are at the table. Of course, this MOU needs to be ratified by the city council. So it will come back as an agenda item, but I wanted to get it out there so that you saw it ahead of time. And then the only other piece of information I have is regarding the police department. They went to a state bid contract company called ProForce. They are able to do an exchange of a current collection of service weapons or new service weapons, essentially getting what the police chief feels like is better than fair market value for the weapons that they would be trading in, and then receiving brand new weapons for the officers. They would be getting about a $15,000 credit and spending about $12,000. So actually there will be no cost to the city to provide your officers with all new service weapons.
Sidearms.
Sidearms, thank you.
And do we know the caliber? They're changing calibers, as I recall.
Yes, and that is not my wheelhouse. So sorry.
Right, I believe they're carrying 45s now. I believe they're going back to 9. I believe it's my
understanding. Okay.
Just an FYI. Okay. Mr. Higgins.
I move that we adjourn.
I beg your pardon. You have council comments. I'm sorry.
No, I don't.
No. Well, yes, you do.
They're moved.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, we're covered quite adequately by this point.
Okay. Well, then I move that we adjourn. Okay.
Second.
All right. Those in favor, signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay. We stand adjourned.